cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares.
Well, we'll make stacks of cash.
We also have a rare treat today. We have Mr. Dan Janitas in office, he's going to be here. Lou's, we still have Lou. We still have Chan Flanagan calling later. We have a full show today, but we got a buddy in the office, which we haven't seen much since the riots and everything, right? Right, Dave? I mean, it's nice to have somebody in. Lou, how are you?
I'm good, sir. I assume Mr. Janitas is being treated to the wonders of the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet.
Well, Dan's first comment was, there's nobody down here. What's going on?
Yeah.
It's a... South Loop is a bizarre place now, Lou. You'd be walking along the street by yourself, hopefully with, like, a long rifle or something. It's like...
Open... I don't think open carry is legal in Chicago. It's not Kenosha.
No. It's a bizarre world. Hey, did you hear about the big record in Chicago yesterday in our fine park district?
No. What happened?
Some guy's fishing in the Humboldt Park Lagoon, right? And he thinks he's got something bigger to bass. He hauls out a record 72-pound carp.
Oh, my God. Was it Asian?
King carp, whatever that is.
I have no idea.
Some sort of an invasive species, so the park district thinks they might get on it. They might have a problem. You think? How does a carp make it from someplace to a lagoon?
That's a great question. I assume somebody dumped it in there.
I would imagine. I mean,
maybe it's somebody's pet carp that got too big for the bowl, and they
could be
popped it in there.
Tom, I like the fact that he had it in the shopping cart.
Yeah, then he puts it in the shopping cart and walks down the street to get it weighed.
That's classic. He had a shopping cart with him, or he just...
Evidently, or there must have been one hanging around. Whatever. At the stock futures up again today. Lou, what did you make of... Dan, you got your mic and your headphones over there?
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Read them five by five.
Yeah.
Good morning, Dan.
Morning. We have all kinds of stuff. We have people calling up for some questions for Dan later. But what do you make of this CPI number? And then for the next 4 hours on TV, everybody's in denial. Is this crazy or what?
It's not crazy. This is something I'm sure you and Dan will talk about, but the press, these numbers are not consistent with the narrative that most of the people in the press want to align with, and that's that, Joe Biden is giving us a return to normalcy, and the step is transitory, and we need to do everything we can now, because they've seen the handwriting on the wall from Virginia and New Jersey. We need to do everything we can now to prevent a huge swing in the elections in 2022.
Well, Lou, no matter what political side anybody's on, and I'm trying to be in the middle these days, but what political side people are on, does anybody think that a general degradation where every 2 years or 4 years you sweep people out and throw other people in just because nobody can be worse than the people you have, that's not very healthy, is it?
I don't think it is, but I mean, the idea that I find it interesting that you're surprised that the press is having difficulty digesting this stuff, given the position that they align themselves with in 2020, well, 2016. All of the reporting, I'm so down right now on reporting from pretty much any media source that I see these reports and I routinely start filtering immediately for what I consider to be sort of a political angle that drives the train. And the CPI number is the latest, but I noted the other day that the manufacturer of the Pfizer vaccine is calling for some kind of criminal penalty for misinformation being put out on various social media and media sources.
What about him?
I was going to think. I was going to say, what misinformation? Like the fact that your vaccine still isn't licensed, or the fact that your vaccine is not really doesn't really provide immunity, but only mitigates symptoms, or the fact that you're pushing a vaccine on children. Pushing for a vaccine to be used on children who have less risk of problems from COVID than they do from the flu. Which misinformation is giving you fits?
By the way, I interviewed some 6-year-old yesterday, a young girl. God, she was a riot. She goes, I said, what do you think about this vaccine? What's the good news? She goes, the good news is I can stop wearing this mask, I hope. And I go, okay. She had somewhat figured out. You know what? Lou, I'm having a real hard time, and Dan, jump in whenever you want. I'm having a real hard time trying to figure out whether
By the way, in terms of classic misinformation, the idea that masks are effective is a pretty good sized piece of misinformation.
Oh, without a doubt. But I don't. If you watch the, you know, I watch the financial news. Obviously, everybody knows my job, and Dan's too, is to manage money for people. So we have to. We have to watch the news that we don't even really want to watch because that's our job, right, Dan?
Absolutely.
People give us money so they don't have to watch the stuff all day, basically. But you watch it, and, you know, Lou, there's a dynamic here that I'm going to say that the two of us in this room, Dan and I this morning, might actually say to people, cash is okay for a while. Well, nobody else is going to say that when they want you to send them money and charge you 1.5%. Right, so, you know, we might actually be truthful. Maybe probably it's why neither one of us are Merrill Lynch, but the storyline after the number came out yesterday and after the horrible auction, they didn't have the press, as you say. I don't know if people on CNBC can be considered press, but the press doesn't have to give out the information. All they do is have to interview people. So they interview the head of Pfizer, was either yesterday or the day before, and he's on there for an hour. Then they have people from Stifel, Nichols, and about 5 other firms, and they come in and are like, oh, no, don't worry about it. So it's there could be an asteroid heading for New York, and they would never say, the thing you should do is call me up and get your money out of here and put it in the bank. I mean, they will never. So it's almost like the people, by talking their own game and being interviewed all day long by alleged news stations, their interview is certainly not news. They're selling their own horse. I mean,
but they're pumping the narrative.
Yeah,
we've talked about this many times. There's been a huge blow, I think, to the credibility of our governmental, our governmental agencies as a result of COVID. And I mean, I never. You know that I was involved in a mandatory vaccination program back in the early aughts, and as a result, I never trusted people like the CDC or NIH or FDA to give an honest opinion when there was a political issue at stake. And watching this play out over the last 2 years, and now watching it continue to play out with the information going out on the vaccine and how, you know, important it is and what's necessary to do. I mean, it has now devolved into a political, tribal, kind of conflict. Are you with us or against us? Are you with the vaccine or are you not? And if you're not, then we're going to make you and we're going to try to force the issue. There is not a single justification for that OSHA mandate that was issued by the government last week. Not one. It's not an emergency. We know it's not an emergency because if it was, we wouldn't be waiting 2 months to put it into effect. It is simply an attempt by the administration to try to cover up the fact that it is not managing this disease any better than the previous administration. There's no justification because the vaccine does not stop the spread of the disease. There's no justification for a mandate because you're not protecting people from infection by virtue of the vaccine. So what's the logical basis for putting this into effect? there is none other than this tribal identification issue. And so, and yet you have CDC, FDA, NIH, all swinging in behind the administration. You need this.
That's not all that newer. I mean, the idea that you get associated with I will not put myself anywhere near in the man's category, but I remember Milton Friedman being interviewed one day, and when he was, before I was in grad school, he was considered this very liberal economist, right? And when he was saying how the Fed was basically bleeping up, which they were, and then afterward he became this conservative voice of the monetary school. And so one day somebody asked him on TV, they go, Dr. Friedman, how come you were liberal, now you're a conservative, you know, what changed? Why did you change? He goes, I never changed. Goes, the label changed.
Absolutely.
People called me liberal, now they call me. I actually had somebody write me yesterday, they go, listen to the show, I can't believe how conservative you're getting because of what because of your economic policy. I'm not conservative. All I'm saying is all the stuff I've read for 50 years is if you pump too much money into the system, you're going to get general inflation. And how is it that our people that run the place that we pay to do it don't seem to figure that out? And then they keep talking about supply. Do we still think that the inflation in the 70s was caused by the Arabs? I mean, or have we put that one to bed yet? I thought we had. And now here we're going down the same road, right? Does that make me conservative? No, it means I read a book once in a while.
It is astounding to see to see people proceeding on this train wreck, and you're just watching it coming down the tracks, and you know what the answer is, and I know what the answer is, and anybody who lived through the 70s knows what the answer is, at least in general terms, and yet the policymakers continue to just operate. I don't understand it, except that, and to go back to one of my favorite themes, when you put ideologues in positions of power, reality doesn't matter. The answer to, for an ideologue, the answer to fixing the problem is more of the same that got you into the problem in the first place.
Well, I think the thing, Dan,
kind of like the cross examination of Kyle Rittenhouse,
well,
up in Kenosha yesterday.
But Lou, I think the part that's not, and I think this comes down to your criticism of the press, and I think that my criticism of both sides is it's the 10%ers on both sides that control their press. My huge bitch with inflation is if you were to go out and say, I never complained. I mean, I don't think Dan has either. Nobody complained about a stock split. Okay, price goes down by half, and everybody has two shares. They used to have one. What's the big deal? Other than maybe somebody, it's easier to do round lots for people, because the thing's not $1,000 a share. But and you can use options better because everybody's got 100 shares instead of 75, right, Dan? I mean, so there's reasons why I would like stock splits. It has nothing to do with changing value. But the reason why inflation is so insidious is it's not even. And especially, Louis, you've talked for as long as you've been on the air with me about this, our essentially fascist economic system where, I mean, do you think that Lowe's and Home Depot and are not huge winners in this game? Because they can just raise prices. And I honestly, since I've been, I still do all this stuff. I mean, I like doing it and help people remodel and stuff. I'm seeing less and less people in these stores. Now, obviously, I don't have a camera in the place. I can't give you a count or whatever. I'll bet you that the average ticket is going up fairly dramatically, and the amount of tickets are dropping.
Chief, as somebody who's in a remodeling project right now, in the middle of it, I can tell you exactly what's happening, and it's a disaster. My contractor is touching base with me every other day. Here's what's happening. Here's what cabinets look like. If you want to order cabinets for a basement remodel, here's the delay. Here are the choices. It's anything, stuff as basic as drywall, as lumber, as roofing nails, as taping and mud for drywall fixing. All of that's every single element of our construction and sort of, you know, building trade work has been affected by this. And it's not, you know, the first wave of it was last year when if you were trying to buy a 2x4, you saw the price quadruple.
Yep. You know,
if you were trying to buy a piece of sheetrock, and again, I'm going off my personal experience, if you saw a piece of sheetrock coming in, you saw its price go up, you know, double or triple per sheet. And then it kind of tapered off and fell back down again, and now it's right back up. And you know, there are any number of factors. The supply chain is very complicated. I don't know why we thought we could shut the economy down the way we did and have no, you know, no impact like this. But you know, the policy, I think a lot of it has to do with class. I'm reading a book now about that really charts the reaction to COVID that this journalist in New York City noted, and he said, you know, one of the things nobody really talked about, although we talked about it here, and you've talked about it forever since this thing started, was the fact that for the people making the decisions and the people they ran around with, the impact of COVID was really minimal because they could work from home.
Right.
Their paychecks didn't stop. They didn't have to get out there. The people that got hammered by the lockdowns were the blue-collar trades, the economic class that was removed from this white-collar, you know, elect, that, as John McWhorter calls them, elect, that were insulated from the impact of this solely because the people making the laws did not want that impact to affect them and their friends.
Well, there are people.
It affected a lot of other people, and the impact of that was basically ignored by our policymakers.
And for some reason, the people in the middle and the low end don't seem to have a voice. I mean, obviously, there's two classes of people. There were people getting the sandwiches delivered to them in their home. And there were people who were delivering the sandwiches, right?
And by the way, the people delivering the sandwiches could see that the people to whom they were delivering it were not following the protocols. We're not restricting their travel. They were doing whatever it is they wanted to, but they expected everybody else to bow to this. Oh, you need to be masked, or you need to be vaccinated, or you need to shut down travel. You know, the rest of them are not affected by this. The travel in and out of Glasgow wasn't affected by the UK shutdowns and lockdowns and quarantine requirements. Those people flew in and out as they wanted to. And you know, the rest of the working class of the UK looks at that, and again, you and I talk about this. What's the reaction to this? The reaction to this is you end up with a populist or demagogue who comes in and says, I'm going to fix this.
The amount of wealth that it's created in some areas, the amount of money that's been sloshing around, I would never even have imagined this. If you would have, you know, I obviously don't take tests anymore, but if you would have said your worst fear, what would happen? The idea that the wealth pockets that it's created for guys like Musk and people like that, and when what's the name of the place that came public yesterday, Dan? The auto company that's worth more than Ford and GM in its first day. $95 billion, and they've delivered 100 trucks. I mean, for God's sake. Matter of fact, Lou, here's something you should have done. If you had given them a deposit, what was the story on this, Dan? If you give them a deposit on a truck, they cut you in for a share or something? And you made like $1,000 on the IPO yesterday, just if you were in line for the deposit.
Right.
Lou, the amount of cash is dramatic, and that's why you see people that are trying to look at the tax law and they go, "What are we doing? How do these people not pay any tax?" I mean, because once you start doing this stuff, it leaks over into every part of your life. I mean, you look at the AOCs of the world, and they say, well, geez, you gotta like tax these people. And first of all, you know where I am on that. I think that the tax law should be fair and like everybody should pay, which is a revelation, right, to most people. But you look at these you get a guy like Musk, and he, and you know, I'm not saying the guy's not a genius, and he is. He, He ends up with, of course, he's got problems now because of ordinary income versus the other, which I'm not going to go into, but you get one of these guys that have his shares at his company, and it blows to the moon, and now the guy's worth, you know, pick a number, $4 billion, whatever it is. Well, I don't want anything wrong to happen to the guy, but if he croaks tomorrow and leave, I don't know if he has any kids, but if he left the stock to his kids with a step-up basis, the kids could sell it next week, and nobody ever pays taxes on any of that, Lou. And people look at that and they say, wait a minute, how's that? And I have to be careful if I pay some guy over $600 to shovel snow in the wintertime because the Fed wants $90 out of the guy. I mean, clearly, we've got issues here, and this inflation thing, by blowing up certain areas, just makes it worse, right? I think.
Well, this goes back again to what you and I, a continual theme on this program, that is that the regulatory state, because of its incredible growth and its inexorable growth, the regulatory state creates problems for people who can't afford to get lawyers to advise them on how the regulatory state can be avoided.
Basically,
the more regulations you have, the harder it is for small businesses to operate. Large businesses can operate because they can afford the regulatory avoidance schemes that you have to undertake in a situation like that. Small businesses, individual taxpayers, they are ensnared. And that, again, you want to create a populist revolution? Here we go. This is an easy way to do it.
But how do you even do it? I mean, how do you, in terms of, let's take this next election. How does a regular person, whether you're on the right or the left, I mean, how can you possibly influence what's going on? I mean, what's his name? The guy from Citadel. I keep forgetting his name.
Chief, you saw how regular people, you know, flummoxed the system in 2016. That's what Donald Trump was.
Well, sure, but I think he was a carrying.
I mean, you end up with people that, you know, Marjorie Taylor, and I'm just looking at this from the right. Marjorie Taylor Greene is an example of a reaction by regular people to try to do something. Lauren Daybart, the woman that owns the cafe out here in Colorado where all the waitresses are carrying sidearms, is an example.
It sounds like your kind of place.
That's an interesting place to eat, by the way. It's in a town called Rifle, Colorado. It's just off Interstate 70 out west. But you end up with these populist reactions. And people like Green, or alternatively, like some of the bomb throwing lunatics you have I characterize them that way, on the left, that's how these people get elected. I mean, how do you end up with New Jersey replacing the head of the state senate with a truck driver? That's what
people don't want. They don't want people that are co-opted, and that's why. I mean, your buddy Newt said that Trump was a follow-on of the Obama situation. Obama was young; they didn't think he had a chance to be co-opted yet. So that he was going to fight Washington. He was, you know, young, good-looking guy, seemed to have good ideas, which I think he does have pretty good ideas. But all of a sudden he got co-opted, and they said, "Okay, next time."
Well, Chief, Obama was a Chicago.
I get that, but I get that. But I'm saying the normal voters felt that he was a fresh face from the outside. He was and all of a sudden, that didn't work out so hot in terms of looking to change Washington. So along comes Trump. Now he clearly knows the politics on the other side. He knows these guys are all getting paid off because he's been paying them off. I mean, so everybody said, okay, this guy can do something. But he was
Trump was a reaction not just to the Democrats. Trump was a reaction to the Republicans.
Oh sure, without question.
That's what's so fascinating. That the Republicans in 2016 had one of the deepest benches in terms of viable political candidates, guys who were smart, who were articulate, and I'm including the women on this too, because there were some very bright, smart women on this, who had political experience, leadership experience, who understood how to, you know, legislation worked and what the government was supposed to do, and he beat every one of them. He didn't just beat them, he beat them like a drum.
But, Lord, but that's not, that's organization. There's no organization. Right when I say it, if somebody wanted to change the tone, this guy can win there, that guy can win there, he can get a local population that's pissed off. put somebody in there. But it doesn't do you any good. It's like one vote on a board, because I was the one vote on the board for a while. It's useless. You might as well stay home, or you might as well go to the bar. What would have to happen is for somebody to pop up right now, or it's probably too late, and say, you know what, I'm running for president as an independent in wherever are we going to be, 2024. But in the meantime, here's 15 people running for House and 5 for Senate in these states. These guys are with me right now and start next year. So when you get there, you have 8 votes in Congress. So now there's 46 on each, or 46 on each side, and you've got the 8 to make the difference. You got to do this from the get-go. And nobody seems to be capable of doing that, or has the money, or thinks that far ahead. This is not a one-shot deal. Because look what happened to Trump. He got in there, he had no support. His personality didn't gain any support. The guy, he's every time he's in a room, he does antagonize people, which doesn't help. But so he got nowhere, basically.
Well, I think the model that you're looking at is, I'm not saying I'm with this guy or against him, is sort of like what you're seeing with DeSantis in Florida. Okay? So DeSantis is a guy who slaps the press around. He's not afraid to counterpunch. And that was one of the big appeals of Donald Trump. After watching Mitt Romney, get bitch slapped by the press and by the Democratic culture and by his opponent, and be a nice guy and not come back and respond. Everybody on the, to the right of center left said, I want a candidate who's going to fight back. So DeSantis will do that, and he will attack the press. He will attack the Democratic leadership. He's not afraid to come out and say that, the president's off his rocker or whatever. And yet at the same time, he doesn't go to the vulgar. At least not yet.
Lou, we gotta dash off the break, but do your vulgar on break, and then we'll come back. SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 102. Dan, don't talk so much, buddy. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. a longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now,
right now. Welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. In the studio, we have Mr. Dan Janitis, which is a rare treat. He came up from Florida just to see you and me, David. What do you think?
Love it.
Yeah.
I love Florida, too.
Hey, you were just down there. I might have to go down there one of these days. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 94. This is after the big CPI shock yesterday. And now, to tone down the shock, instead of saying 0.9% increase for 1 month and let people sit there and go, let's see, 0.9 times 12, that's pretty bad. You almost can't get that number. They give you the 6.3 number over last year, which is bad enough, but it isn't 0.9 times 12. So you got to be careful what people are telling you these days. I don't know why they keep changing. Well, I do know why. They don't want to. Anyway, Dow Futures up 45. Individual stocks in the Dow, we've got Caterpillar up $1.32. Caterpillar's been hot lately. American Express up $1.25. We've got Microsoft up $1.56. But the big thing, and when Dan is in full-time, where he has to talk for sure, he's going to tell us all about Rivian. And how many shares of this do you have, Dan? 10,000?
We're on the sidelines still.
But are those trucks? They look pretty neat.
Absolutely, yeah.
Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 11, call that flat. FTSE up 29.4%. CAC around up 5, call that flat. So they're muted today, muted. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 171.6%. Shanghai up 40, that's 1.1%. Hang Seng up 251.1%. This is after they were kind of leaking a little bit. Evergrande, now the stocks are going to the moon. So it took 20 years for these guys to be in trouble, and they're fixed in 2 weeks. I don't know if I buy that necessarily. Yesterday, Dow was down 240, S&P down 38, NASDAQ down 263. So we were down, but not huge. I mean, we've been up every day, so it's a little bit of a correction. 10-year, we're up to 1.57. It's up 12 basis points. Not quite up to, what did we get? 1.61 a few weeks ago, Dan, I think.
It's about as high as it got.
Yeah, and the Bund, minus 0.24, so they're still not anywhere near the minus 0.08 they were a couple of weeks ago. Japan unchanged at positive 0.06. Oil, we got oil down 69 cents, 80.65. They were up over 82 for a while. Actually, might have touched 83. Brent down 56 cents, 82.07. Natural gas up 11 cents. This is the wild stuff. I wish I'd been trading this, or I'm glad I wasn't, depending if I was on the right side or the wrong side of this one. But they're back exactly $5 now, from being over 6, under 5, over 6, under 5, now back to 5. We've got gold up 10.50 to 18.58. Silver up 16 cents, 24.94. Copper up 6 to 4.38. I've been long gold for a while for my people, and I don't know, maybe I'm smelling some vindication. Sometimes you don't know, Dan, if you're just early or if you're just stubborn. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you can never figure that out. Bitcoin down $1,400, but still, 64,853. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. I'm glad the guy with the 72-pound fish didn't get hit by a car across the street.
Yes, good morning. 6:37 in Chicago. Today's weather, 56, partly cloudy. We're about at our high. There'll be periods of rain this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 57 and clear. It's going to be 86 and sunny. Traffic this morning, normal buildup for rush hour. Problem spots are the Kennedy, Eisenhower, 294, all the construction areas. No accidents reported at this moment. In sports, NBA, Bulls beat the Mavericks last night, 117-107. Suns beat Trail Blazers, 119-109. In the NHL, Minnesota beat the Arizona, 5-2. The Hawks are off and host Arizona Friday night. NFL, Miami hosts the Ravens tonight. The Bears have a much-needed bye week, and Arizona hosts the Panthers on Sunday. Back to you, Chief.
Why don't the Bears just take the rest of the year off?
That would probably be the best thing for them.
You know, they've got like another four national TV games.
It'd be the best for the health of Justin Fields.
Yeah.
That is a fact, Lou. You are 100% correct.
But, by the way, gentlemen, happy Veterans Day. I meant to say that at the start of the hour, but happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day
to our veterans out there in listening land.
And how many people you think remember what the day used to be called, Lou?
Well, it was Armistice Day.
Yeah.
It's they're referring to it now in England as Remembrance Day.
World War One. By the way, you two gentlemen and David, I'll put him in that group. Are you guys in the old group that says there was World War One and World War Two? Or are you in the somewhat new group that says it was just one war with about 15 years off?
Oh, I think there were two distinct conflicts.
Old war, yeah, definitely.
Really? You guys were in there?
Oh, definitely. World War One and World War Two. Studied it a lot.
Yeah, I was firmly in that camp with you guys until I read, that was the book I read. It was the Freedom from Fear or one of the other ones. I don't know one of the other ones I read, but I never really dug into the Treaty of Versailles. And Lou, maybe you've dug into this. It's not something people necessarily look at, but what caught my eye was the young economist at the Treaty of Versailles was none other than John Maynard Keynes.
Right.
And so if you actually look at that particular treaty and the something like 90 or 95% of all the known oil reserves in the world were on one side of the table when they left. You know, I mean, it seemed like that the treaty almost presupposed that World War II was going to happen.
Well, the reason I say that they were two distinct wars, and I'm certainly in the camp that the Treaty of Versailles, effectively created the conditions. I won't say it was inevitable, but they certainly greatly heightened the probability of a future conflict in Europe. But the reason I don't say they were one sort of continuous conflict with a slight intermission is because nobody really understands what started World War One.
We all understand
what started World War Two, but nobody understands what started World War One, and that's why I think they were two separate conflicts.
Did you ever read a book? And my parents had it. I think it died in one of the nights they had some water in the basement. The Fall of the Dynasties.
Don't think I read that one. I read Barbara Tuchman's The March of Folly, which talks a little bit about this.
Well, because it took basically, I don't even know who these guys were. There were the Habsburgs. There was the, who were the guys in were the Hohenzollerns? Were they German?
Yeah, the Hohenzollerns, yeah.
Then the guys in Turkey, the Ottomans. Then there was the Russians. And how everybody had basically no idea how to govern. they were all in a mess, but the arms race all over was spectacular to the point where someday, somewhere, there was going to be a match, you know.
The assassination of Ferdinand,
yeah.
Which is in of itself an interesting story in terms of how it actually happened and how unlucky he was that day.
What do you mean? He had a bad driver.
Pardon me?
He had a bad driver. They missed the first...
The guy drove past the first assassination spot and then drove to the next one.
We drove right back.
Happened to blunder into Princip. But my point is that there was no reason to think that assassination was going to, you know, light up the powder keg that consumed however many millions of lives it consumed, you know, 4 years later. There was no logical reason for it to do so. It was a series of sort of dominoes toppling, but there was no reason for one domino as it fell over to necessarily hit another one. And at the end, when Germany said we're going to come to the aid of our brothers down here in Southern Europe, And the Russians said, well, we'll put a stop to that. The Germans then immediately said, you know, if we get a declaration from the Brits, our first attack is going to be across Western Europe. We're not going to go south. We're not going to go east. We're going to go west. And our war plans require that. And that was inevitable once once Germany decided it was going to go to war. There's a great, and I don't know if Dave can find it to tweet it out, there's a great history rap battles that does a rap talk or a rap version of the history of the start of World War One, and it features these guys all in costume, you know, rapping away about their various positions as the heads of various governments. But, I mean, if you read the documentation from that time, the Brits were, for example, looking at the Germans and going, what are you doing threatening Belgium? What does Belgium have to do with what's going on down in Serbia? And why are we gearing up for this? It makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, the people who, that's what I'm saying, the people who were in charge, the royal families, were so incompetent and useless that the military people just kind of took over, kept spending money, and all of a sudden they had all these toys and they wanted to use them.
I don't think it's that simple.
Well, I don't think it's that simple. I'm just saying that's part of it.
I mean, it may well have been part of it, but that's. But this is, to go back to your point, this is why I say World War One stood by itself in terms of whatever caused it and why it rolled out. Now, once it ended today, in history, once it ended, I think that the conditions were ripe for what happened next. With the idea that they were going to keep, you know, Germany was the economic powerhouse of Europe, and they tried to shackle it, and the Germans were having
well, none of it. You don't have to go too far back to we were attacked on 9/11, and I think it was 17 Saudis and 3 Egyptians, and we invaded Iraq. That's what we felt like doing.
Well, we weren't going to hold the government of Saudi Arabia responsible for the actions of several of its citizens.
Even though some of them seem to have gotten money from the royal family, which but I mean, it's not the first time that people use any excuse to do what they want to do anyway.
I'm on board with that, because if you look at the incoherent justifications for the Iraq invasion, I would agree with you, and the sloppy way that was executed.
And how is it different than what we were talking about earlier? That when in the economic problems we have right now, the solution is to take care of the people that you want to take care of. It always is. There are no economic solutions there. They're just taking care of the people you want to take care of.
I would tend to agree with you. And again, this goes back to the question we were discussing before the break about who. You know, how common people affect a change. And the reason common people want to affect a change is because the common people their concerns are not being represented. And so to the extent that you see these kinds of populist candidates arise, that's a huge reason for it.
But I feel sorry for them, Lou, because I don't know, you know, with all the things I talk about, I have no idea. I've never seen anything this, other than maybe the robber baron age when there were some monopolies back there. I have no idea how right now you let these places get so friggin' big, and now you've got a general inflation problem on top of a cartel, oligopoly, monopoly problem, which we've been pushing towards for the last 30 years. I don't know how you turn this bus around. I mean, I don't see how you now all of a sudden force Home Depot to be competitive. Or how Amazon can't raise prices wherever they feel like, or they actually probably don't do that, but they turn around and screw the people that go through them. You know, they don't feel like, Jeff was talking about, they're doing all this, financing of people. Well, the reason why they're financing people is they're not paying the people on their list for 30 days. They're essentially their suppliers, independent suppliers, to turn around and finance their stuff. I mean, we've never let anybody have that kind of power. I mean, even banks didn't have that kind of power.
But now you saw intimations of this with the way Walmart operated when it first broke on the scene and became the retail juggernaut. I mean, I did some work with Walmart, and one of the things that you saw from their actions, and it's the same thing that I saw with every one of my relatively, you know, young clients who were starting up their corporate life, but who suddenly found themselves in possession of a lot of market power. American Online and some other entities. Those guys got pushy and they got, I won't say belligerent, maybe a little arrogant, thinking that because they were successful, this was the way things were always going to be. And so, yeah, they pushed. There's, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with, if in fact we are serious as a culture about removing our supply chain from overseas and bringing as much of that stuff back there as we can in terms of manufacturing.
Why would you ever, as somebody, make yourself
a... That'll affect Amazon. That'll affect their ability to dictate the marketplace.
But put yourself in a spot like Dan is. Dan's almost a banker. The way he does all these bonds and stuff. Who the hell would, if you came up with something and said, you know, we don't have, pick anything in the supply chain that there's a problem getting from China or some other place, and say, looks to me, this is the way it's supposed to work, Lou and Dan.
Let's say drywall.
Well, whatever, to say, okay, it looks to me like there's a problem with drywall, and the story is, people are supposed to look at a need in our economy, and you say, wow, if it looks to me like they sell, you know, 3 pound nails and 4 pound nails, and nobody sells a 3.5 pound nail, and it looks like it's a better. Somebody will go out and borrow the money, has the idea, maybe gets a patent on it, or maybe doesn't, and he goes out and he gets a little place and he starts selling these things. He gets a little bit bigger. That's the American way.
Yeah,
those are the people that Dan deals with all that. That's why the supply chain, the government. I mean, that's why Russia tried to control all that and they can't, because people do a much better job on their own. Now all of a sudden, you've got everyone pushes.
Not according to the nominee for the Comptroller General of the United States.
Yeah, well, she's a different story.
Touche.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Lou, is that now,
Tommy,
would you ever, if you went to Dan and you said, "I'm going to do this. I want a loan from you." The first thing he's going to say is, "Well, that's this guy's story. That's Trump's story." Or the next guy's story. 2 years from now, you're going to have this plant, and guess what? We're going to be buddy buddies with China again, and you're out. I mean, why would anybody believe that anything these people do is for the long haul? Whichever side you're on, why would you ever put that kind of money at work, thinking that you could believe these idiots? And when I say idiots, I'm talking about both sides. That the policy won't change so rapidly in the next 2 years if we flip the Congress, or it won't change in 4 years.
And again, that's the outgrowth of a regulatory state. The more intrusive these regulations get, the more widespread the government reach, the more susceptible you are to changes in the government and changes in the political whim. I mean that arguably is the whole purpose behind this $3.4 trillion or whatever it is infrastructure deal that the Democrats want to put in place. The idea is to create a permanent, to work such a fundamental change in things like voting systems and social safety nets and federalize all that stuff so that you try to work a permanent change with the idea that it will be impossible, because you're giving people money, it'll be impossible to unravel it. And that's what's happening right now, and it will result in a huge expansion of federal executive power and federal bureaucratic power, and that will provide even additional inertia that precludes the rise of entrepreneurs, the rise of creative businesses. I mean, when you couple that with the downward spiral that our public education system is engaged in, it's astounding. I'm trying to remember the name of the sociologist. It's Rob Henderson, I think, who wrote about something called luxury beliefs, and he talked about he took the idea of luxury goods and pushed that up to sort of a cultural level, and said that if you're really rich, you can engage in what are called luxury beliefs, which are beliefs that appear to be inimical to you personally, but beliefs that you yourself would never abide by or never take in as your own, but that you push because it makes you look virtuous, but that have the effect of permanently damaging the people who believe in them or take these beliefs as a way to conduct your life. And all of these luxury beliefs that we see being adopted, again, by our ideologically driven leadership, are creating this problem and creating this downward spiral, and they're at the heart of this $3.4 trillion bill that the Democrats are going to try to push through Congress.
Speaking of which, I saw just a bit of a blurb. Maybe Dave can find it because he's pretty good at this. And Dan might be one of these guys. I don't know. There's something like 300 or 400 or 500 huge luxury yachts being built for the movers and shakers of the world right now, with the intention that you can live on these things away from like any, the amount of money, say it's 500 that these guys are spending on this, it's an astronomical amount of dough. It's in the hundreds of billions of dollars. The guys are maybe not that much, but I was looking at some of these things. Well, it was just a little brief spot on the internet. I looked. God, Lou, they're like a boat like I've never seen. They've got to be 300 feet long or something.
They're longer than that. I had some business dealings with these folks pre shutdown when I was working in Italy, those vessels typically have their own supply ship that tails along behind them. To keep them stocked with fuel and food and liquor and everything else, because they're designed to stay at sea for so long.
Well, one of the things I think that I brought this up before, and Dan can argue if he wants, but there's a certain discipline to pretty much everything you do. I mean, if you like to drink, there's a certain level where you might fall on your face and break your nose walking home, or you might get hung over the next day. But so there's a discipline to everything, even drinking, right? Now, the discipline in spending money as a government is supposed to be, it's very simple. When you run for office, you're going to tell people, I will tax you X and I'll do a good job, or the other guy's doing a crummy job, and by the way, he's taxing you X plus because he's incompetent and I can do better. And what the idea being is, the discipline is, for me to spend money, I either need to borrow it from people, which is a problem, or I need to tax people, which is a problem. To the people. But these guys in the last few years, if they've added a third thing, we're just going to print it. This is not new. But if you study any economics at all, history, my 4 years of Latin didn't get me with a language, but it got me pretty good on the history of Rome and Greece. And the Romans did the same thing. They devalued their currency. And it cost them economically almost as much as all the goofball emperors they had. Because they all of a sudden became a broke state when they shouldn't have been. And now we're doing the point now is, we can spend all this money, we're just going to print it. But I don't think, I mean, everything that Biden's doing in these plans, if you could do it, if somebody landed from space with, golden bounty or something, if you could do it to everybody, you would do it. Okay? I mean, economics is, what is the definition of economics? It's the apportionment of scarcity, right? How do you apportion scarcity? If there was enough steaks for everybody to have one tonight, you wouldn't have to worry about it. You just give everybody a steak.
Well, the people that are making the decisions, and I include this occasional cortex, who, by the way, has an economics degree from Boston University.
Wow.
What these people have forgotten is that the production, you're not affecting production by simply printing more money. And they are under the opinion that if you print the money, it will simply fix the problems, because you won't have people saying, I can't pay for stuff. They don't understand that without the production, concurrent production increases, you have actually less to buy with the money that you're making.
It should be the same amount. I mean, if it was a general inflation, if you gave everybody, if you walk in with your Washington to the Fed and you walk out with a Jefferson, which is a $2 bill, everything would just adjust. If you owed me $20, you now owe me $40.
You would think that would be obvious, but yeah. Apparently it's not.
No, apparently it's not. And your team, are you guys going to go bowl game this year? What are you doing, your Air Force team?
Well, they're bowl eligible. I'm sick of the fact that they lost to Army last week. That was a terrible football game. I watched it with a bunch of friends, and I you know, there apparently is some unrest in the cadet wing about, you know, how come our football is so boring, and I made the comment that, you know, these kids have grown up on a diet of NFL and SEC college where they throw the ball and they've got these fantastic athletes, and you know the service academies don't have that. They don't have the capability to do that. What they've got to do, if they play a team that can throw, and Air Force has played a couple, they got to slow the game down and make it dull.
Yeah, pretty much.
Dull is what they can win. So they're bowl eligible. They'll go to a bowl. I mean, that's a success for the coach. I mean, but the season is not successful for us until we bring a Commander in Chief's trophy home, and I don't. You know, bowl game. Hey, that's great. Go play the bowl game. It's good for the program. It gets some exposure. But the short answer is, we used to say this when I was playing. You know, and we would face teams that could just run. You know, run all over us. You know, based on the kind of athletes that the service academies have to recruit. You know, fast people are stupid. You know, that was the general assessment. Because we're just not, the service academies just are not going to get the kids that have the kind of speed that you need to run and athleticism that you need to run the modern offense.
Who would you rather beat, Army or Navy?
Oh, I'd always rather beat Navy. Just because they have such a beautifully scenic, you know, kind of old world campus down there in Annapolis on the water. There's more of a natural competition there. I always felt more of an institutional affinity with the Army because it was the Army Air Corps, you know, until fairly recently.
Do those guys have their own stadium? You guys do, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Army, yeah. They've got a beautiful stadium, Mikey Stadium up in the hills. Over Hudson, but gorgeous.
It's a big game. They go somewhere else where there's more people, right?
Right. Well, the Army Navy game traditionally was played in Philadelphia. They've moved it to New York a couple of times. Yeah, they play in a bigger stadium because there's more national interest in that game. You know, the first Air Force Army football game was played at Soldier Field.
Really?
Yep. There was a movement a few years ago to try to get the service academy games moved back to Soldier Field in Chicago because of the venue and everything else. I'm sure the city made it economically impossible to do that. But
they'll get them back when the Bears move.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. If somebody's gonna have to fill that. That's exactly right.
Well, I'm a seller of that because we're talking about a family, unless they got all new leadership. We're talking about a family that's rented a stadium for how many years? 100 years? They never put any of their own money up for a place. So the idea of they're gonna have $120 million interest payment every year in Arlington Heights. I don't think the same leadership does that.
They'll figure some way to extort that money out of the community.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. Up until whenever it was in the early 70s, the Bears were playing at Wrigley. I mean, the idea that you would try to hold an NFL game at Wrigley Field is just nuts.
Well, we got a dash, bud, but I will say this. Up until like a few years ago, because they had two teams in there, the only stadium that has had more NFL games than Wrigley Field is the one that just went down in New Jersey. What was the one that they just got rid of and got the new one? Meadowlands,
yeah.
Yeah, they finally passed Wrigley as the most NFL games in a site. Anyway.
That's interesting.
Lambeau's probably passed them now, maybe too, but for a long time it was Wrigley. Anyway, Lou, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 16.75. NASDAQ Futures up 103. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, don't pay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Dan Gian is in studio, and Dave Scatina, obviously in studio. He's on the board. SP Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 103 after a down day because of the, well, corresponding to a bad CPI number. And what did Rick Santelli say? It was the worst auction he's ever seen or something along those lines. I don't know if you saw that spot, Dan, but, it was, you know, somewhat of a shock. I can't say that, you know, it's that big of a shock, but it was definitely a shock. Yesterday to a lot of people. And we have the VIX really didn't go up all that much. Dan, we're up a little bit. Now we got it down this morning. I think the people who bought the 20 calls maybe are going to be, they're going to want worthless on them. But what do you make of, that? I've had some clients listen to you on the air, and we've been trying to buy, some of the, bonds, and it can really get, if you're only going out 2 or 3 years, which, you know, you've recommended because you're afraid of what's happening, the interest, which is what's happening. I mean, just the between the bid and the offer and some of these things makes a big difference in your return. I mean, and that is, I'm thinking I'm going to swing over to some of your, preferreds rather than, because they're tighter markets than the bonds and some of this stuff.
Yeah, we trade predominantly through interactive brokers, and they do have, an institutional platform, if you will, which is now available to retail people if they're willing to pay a little more, willing to pay a small commission to tighten that spread. So we've always gotten the tighter spread on those, so we're happy getting, we're not having to pay that just because of, you know, being an institution and actually being a bond manager for most of my career. That's very, something that we're very sensitive to. The news yesterday was not necessarily a surprise. Inflation should not be a surprise to anybody. As we've been talking for weeks and months, people are seeing it at the gas price, at the gas pump, but that shouldn't be a surprise because oil prices have come up so much. And supply chain issues have been all over the media. So, you know, that's, again, this isn't so much a surprise. I think the big question comes in is the talk about it being transitory. And also, by the way, inflation's not bad for the economy. Runaway inflation is, but a little bit of inflation is part of the business cycle.
Like your first beer.
Like your first beer. It's okay, but you don't want it to go too far. And actually, you want to stay, actually, to use that analogy, you really want to stay on top of things when this is happening because there are opportunities whether you're looking at opportunities in the bond market, watching fluctuations in rates. So if your focus is short term, there are opportunities to make money. Now, one thing that's also happened that we had spoken about is the infrastructure bill. And although politics has sort of caused that to lag and be back and forth for a long period of time, we have been proponents that this would be good for specifically a number of names. And when I talk about the infrastructure bill, I'm talking about roads and bridges. So we've talked about an allocation to infrastructure stocks. Two of the names that I've mentioned several times are Aztec, which is the paving company, the road company, and Maztec, which does a pure infrastructure play, had been doing a little bit of oil and gas pipeline, but doing more now, cell towers, as well as clean energy and some other areas. Aztec stock was up 15% on Monday. So that was a question of patience paying off. One thing that
are you doing the stock, the common, the preferred, or the bonds with those guys?
With Aztec, the common.
Okay.
And that company, I visited. They're based in Chattanooga. I visited with management. Love the management team there. Their story is they're going to pay a dividend. They're kind of a steady Eddie, but they're going to focus on what they do best, which is roads and paving. And they make the pavers, and they actually do the work. And Sunday I was out for a bike ride close to my house, and they're expanding the road I live off of from two lanes to four lanes. And sure enough, wasn't there one of the Aztec, trucks out there? And then Monday we had a nice 15%, bump. And those 15% bumps don't generally come with the types of names that I recommend, because we tend to be more on the value dividend side, on the equity side, and the microcap side, which could have some nice upside. But the infrastructure play is still there. Now, one thing, and we had talked about it, Tom talked about it a little bit with Lou, his former guest, and was talking about the flooding the system with more and more and more money. Well, the system has already been flooded. It's overflowing. That is a big part of the reason for not only the supply chain issues, but also the problems that the labor shortage. We believe that the labor shortage is somewhat temporary, but we do believe there will be inflation on the wage side. There has to be inflation on the wage side. With the new, we had also talked a little bit about some of the vax mandates and some companies actually letting people go, which seems really bad timing. We already have supply shortages. A lot of those people who are being let go are senior level people who, in engineering and in a number of different fields, who are really competent and really don't come in touch with people very often. Many of them are actually working from home, which I find bizarre. But the timing is not good. So this continuous flooding of more money into the system, whether it be another bill being passed or people being taken out of the employment picture, just not a good combination. Now, when I hear on the news that the economy is bad, it's not bad. The demand side is definitely there. It's the supply side where we're having issues.
Is it? But how do you? By the way, don't let me forget. I got to ask you questions about how do airlines fit into this and if they're buying this stuff. Let's worry about that.
Sure.
We're not talking about this. But now that I've let you know, you can't let me forget it because I do forget stuff. How do you determine right now, Dan? I mean, I've never, in all my years of studying this stuff and the stuff I was forced to read in college, I've never seen I can't tell, to be perfectly honest, whether we're on foot or horseback. If we're talking about a 9%, 10% nominal raise in prices, which is really what we're talking about last month, right, on a yearly basis, so say somewhere between 6.3 and 10 right now, right? I mean, somewhere in there. How the hell do you even figure out whether the demand is just nominal demand, just more money prices going up because people have the money, or whether the demand is actually for more widgets? I can't even tell.
I think it's a combination of both, actually. And I think it's a combination as many places. And I will definitely give this to you. Chicago is definitely behind the curve in terms of opening up, especially compared to where I am in Florida, but also where I traveled over the summer, that that there is, you know, everywhere is open. And not only that, something that Lou talked about a little bit, or he started touching on earlier, which I think is a very important point, is that this can create an opportunity for new small business owners to get in the market. You have to kind of be somewhat politically agnostic and not really let the, you know, if you want to be a good business owner and you have a great idea, this is what, you know, as Tom, you pointed out, this is what America's all about, but I think this is a good time to start a business. And I know people who have gotten back in, and those stores that shut down are now being replaced with new stores and new business models. And so this is, you know, on the small business side, this is a good opportunity to get involved, watching the costs. People have more money saved. A lot of people received a lot more PPP than you think. They're not necessarily waving their hands out there and bragging about it, but there was quite a bit of PPP put into the system.
You know how much was put in Illinois?
How much?
Like $38 billion.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, the people were, yes, initially I think it was slow to get the money, but from what I understand, just doing my own surveys with people in different industries, they're flooded with money. And the people that were willing to be honest with me were saying that, yes, you know, this isn't an issue at all. So why flood more money into the system? It just doesn't make sense. And a lot of the, if you look at the second spending package, a lot of the areas have already had pretty decent funding. There are pretty good tax credits on, you know, for a number of the areas that are outlined in that spending bill. What we do need is the infrastructure to continue to grow out and be competitive nationally, and that will continue to add jobs. I think you can pick and choose some of the other areas that may have more or less need. But what a lot of people aren't realizing, and again, I'm not necessarily blaming the press for this, but we don't hear about this a lot in the press, is that people did quite well. So if the press was to take all those good stories of the business owner that owned a, you know, because I have a client that owns a number of restaurants, and I have a client that owns a number of hair salons, and if you take those clients and you actually talk to them and sort of what the transition was like, they're doing extremely well right now.
Well, if you look at the restaurant people who didn't, we could talk for about a week on this, because for whatever stupid reason, Dan, one of my listeners who I have to go find and like throw a water balloon at, sent me the list of everybody in Illinois who got money.
Yeah.
And I was going through this stuff, and it's outstanding. And if you wanted to be, I don't know, a bad person and not play the game, I don't think I've ever seen anything in government, other than maybe if you were somebody who was really close to the action, you could have cheated on this thing like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I've never seen anything as poorly managed as this in my life. In terms of, but yeah, and you know what? If you look at Employee Retention Act.
Yes.
I actually read a part of that, which I never read a law. For God's sake, Dan, I got through two paragraphs and I said, a restaurant lobbyist wrote this friggin' thing. And without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you had a restaurant that you had to split tables a little further apart and maybe put a big tent outside and doubled your carry out, if you were in an area that let you do that, and close your 4-seat bar, you were considered partially closed, and they gave you 70% of the money you paid in wages.
Absolutely.
Even though your revenue might have been double the year before.
Absolutely.
We had the other people that are just closed, they're just out, right?
Right, and some of it may be that their businesses were already, you know, they already had problems. But the reason I mention all this is just that people are talking, and you see a lot of it, you know, that people are concerned about the economy and inflation and all that. There's a lot of money that's been pumped into the system, and there's a lot of people who have benefited.
Yes.
And we're not on the fringe of an economic downturn here just because gas prices and food prices are up. What we are is in a period of the normal period of inflation that's been exacerbated by the pandemic and the supply chain issues. But we're in that phase of the cycle. Don't be afraid of a little bit of inflation. What we also, going back to the employment now, I'm kind of skipping around here a little bit.
Well, let me ask one more question and then you can go wherever you want to go, which is great. When you look at the number yesterday, and this is what the number I'm asking, and I think we're on the same page, and who benefited, the money in the system, but I'm trying to get a feel for actually how the economy's doing. And I know we're awash in cash, and some people have a lot of it, but if you look at the GDP number that came out, was it last week, I think, for the third quarter?
Yes.
Okay, the number comes out, and it was 2%, and they used the price deflator of, I believe, 3, maybe 2.5. So it really means that the growth was 4.5, subtract 2.5% for inflation, and you're down to 2. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay, yep. Well, now the number yesterday maybe says that 2.5% isn't right, that maybe the number should be 5 or more. And if you subtract the 5 or a 6 from the 5, you got actual negative real growth. And I think we're there, actually, that if you take the money awash and how much people are paying for stuff in terms of and get it all back to 2-year-ago prices, I don't think we're doing as well as we did 2 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think that, but I would also say that I think that might be somewhat temporary. I do think that we're, if you look at, you know, the earnings that have come out in the third quarter have been very strong, and they've been very strong in particular in a lot of the industrial and materials names. You know, we had a, you know, I did a call, Tuesday with a local company here in Chicago, Federal Signal, and, you know, their stock was up 5%.
Yeah, you're talking about those guys.
Yeah, their stock was up, at ticker symbol FSS.
Where are those guys? Are they downtown or are they?
Oak Brook.
Okay.
Yeah, their stock was up 5% on that news, but it's up about 25% since we've recommended them. And here's a heavy machinery company, originally started making the alarms, the sirens for police cars. But, you know, been around forever and ever. And this type of company, you know, when you see the level of growth and you see the, you know, the earnings being, you know, beating estimates and all that, it's hard to believe that we're in a difficult economic environment. It just depends on how you're defining the economy. But as an investment manager, I can say with a certain level of expertise that although we have had a kind of a fall off in the last couple of years because of the pandemic, I will say that the momentum is still forward. Inflation's not going to necessarily hurt that. People aren't going to stop, you know, paying an extra buck for gas. They're not going to, you know, people wanted to get out to the restaurants. And I actually was at a place this past weekend in Florida, was shocked that the prices hadn't changed much since the pandemic, and was, you know, was pleasantly surprised. The place was packed, as are most places that I've been in Florida. So it's people are getting out. People are finding a way to make it. And I'd say the average American you know, may be complaining about oil prices, just as I would jokingly say that some of my closest friends who fall on the liberal side are the biggest complainers about taxes. You know, the taxes are going up. Property taxes, for example, are going up as the value of your home goes up. That's natural. So there's, you know, you are going to see this, but that doesn't mean that the economy isn't good. It doesn't mean there's not opportunity. It doesn't mean that the stock market isn't going to continue to rally. And again, the stock market and the bond market are leading indicators of economic growth. When you hear the stock market is breaking a new high, that should be some comfort that we're not going to have an economic downturn. In history, this has been the case. Look at the bond market.
Whoa. In Weimar, Germany, the stock market went to a million and the place went under.
Yeah, well, you can find an exception. Yeah. Yes. But on the bond side, we had talked briefly that brief period where we started to see a little bit of flattening of the yield curve when it didn't look like the infrastructure bill was going through, when there seemed to be some, you know, lack of comfort in our current administration, or major concerns in our current administration. We saw some flattening of the yield curve, but now we're seeing steepening. And I think steepening is a good thing, and that it's, and again, steep yield curve reflects economic growth. So it's a leading indicator of economic growth, with certain exceptions, you know, depending on the parts of the country. Most places are seeing continued increases in both rents and housing prices. That hasn't stopped. We're seeing a lot of movement around the country, and that is a good thing. So when you see people buying new homes and, you know, furnishing those new homes and buying appliances and all that, that continues to support demand. The supply side, it took a long time for the government to realize that this has been a problem for, you know, for quite some time, but now they're at least focused on it, not sure what they're going to do. I tend to talk directly to the CEOs of the companies involved and look at those guys as the ones who are the decision makers that are going to help us out of this. They have managed their businesses Many of them have managed their businesses very well. Some have been able to pass on costs, and really not had any trouble passing on those costs. And I think, look at the situation that we're in as a new environment, or at least a temporary environment, that is different, but they're well positioned to handle it.
Well, Dan, I think, fortunately or unfortunately, you and I mean, a lot of our clients and stuff are people who are on the plus side of this.
Yes.
For lack of a better term. And I, for whatever reason, and I'm sure you do the same thing, I keep zeroing in. It's probably because of my, Pullman background when I did the inflation stuff for those people, or for my, they were me at the time. I look at this as every man, and I keep zeroing in on this, on the guy who's making the median income. And I see the government sending him a $3,000 check. You know, if he wants to buy a 20-year-old car, he's paying 10 grand where a year ago he's paying five. So the three's already gone plus two. I mean, and now granted that the guy who's getting the 10 for the car is better off, okay, but my point is, I don't know that at the end of the day, I think we can all, I mean, it's, by the way, the world's proven me wrong for a while now. I don't know how far you can go without your middle person coming along with you. And I don't see anybody, I don't see the person making 37, 40 grand a year, his tax bill's gonna go up, the car was going up, the gasoline's going up, everything the guy could possibly, I mean, to people who aren't in the benevolent part of this, I honestly believe inflation is the cruelest tax of all. And because it hits the wrong people at the wrong spot. I can't get shaken from that. Yet I agree with you 100% that if you were on the end of this, if you were one of the guys who got, you know, $500,000 for your restaurant and you laid the people off anyway and you gave yourself a $400,000 bonus, yeah, you're doing fine.
And a $100,000 car.
Yeah, you're doing, I get that part, but I don't know that anything that I've ever seen in my lifetime, other than maybe the GI Bill, which wasn't my lifetime, has separated the classes more than this last year and a half COVID stuff.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you on that. And I think, you know, the thing is, I don't want to sound like the teacher here, but I do teach, you know, and I would
say
that.
Well, you should. You're very knowledgeable.
Yeah,
stuff.
But I think to those people who are, in a salary range that may not be benefiting, 401ks are really important. You know, putting money aside is really important. Had you just done a little bit 10 years ago, we've been an upward movement. So part of the reason that some people are opting for early retirement, and these are people that would fit clearly in the middle class range, is that they have enough money saved in their 401ks and their retirement plans, just because there's been so much upward movement in the market. If you had purchased a home, if you own your home, I'm a believer in paying off the mortgage a little bit at a time, you know, making the double payments to get the interest down. If you've paid that house off, you're sitting on some equity. So if you just look at sort of your average middle class, person that may be having, you know, some concerns about the inflation right now, hopefully you've saved money and have a nest egg in your retirement. Hopefully your home is worth a little bit more and you might be at that stage in your life that you want to downsize.
I can't agree more, but I think the split hairs here.
Yes.
I love jousting with you.
it's fine.
Lou and you, now you know I get up in the morning. I mean, I get to do this with guys that are really bright. You can't be like, I'm not going to accuse you of this, you can't be like Joe Biden and Trump. You can't, just because you and I would have found a way around it. I mean, I still think that me being long gold for my people, if this keeps going.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But just because we have advice as to how you can mitigate what's going on, okay, that's not a solution for somebody who sees a 10% inflation and gets a 5% raise. It's not a societal solution. It's a solution for our clients that maybe if they talk to us, they can wiggle way around it a little bit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But it's not a countrywide solution. Kramer said the other day, and I would never accuse you of being Kramer. He goes, Don't worry about inflation. Mm-hmm. Buy these two stocks that have pricing power. Well, that's fine, Jim, but, you know.
No. What I want to come back to is what I started talking about earlier, and that's wage inflation. And you're talking about the guy making only, you know, I don't know, making an additional 5%, and yet the goods went up 10%. What I want to say is that I think because of what's happening in the labor market, now he's going to be making 10% more because there are a lot more, you know, there's a job shortage. Companies, in order to remain competitive, are going to have to pay more. So this other sort of interesting phenomenon that's happened, you know, I've talked, you know, in recent months about the people approaching retirement and why some people, you know, cop friends of mine retired early, had really good pensions and all that. But the other group that I didn't talk about that I think is really noteworthy are the younger professional people or the younger tradespeople or the younger cops or those people. A number of them, the first responders, a number of them got burnt out, healthcare workers, nurses, burnt out, and were able to have saved enough money and know that the jobs are in such high demand that they could take some time off.
Right.
So that great resignation included a lot of those people who we may or may not have overlooked, and they can come back into the market now with a higher salary, don't have to worry about having a missing place on their resume or missing time on their resume because jobs are in such high demand. So, you know, think of a nurse, for example, makes a decent salary, and now he or she can make a considerable, you know, quite a bit more.
Well, yeah, I'm a little concerned a little bit what you just said, because I think the average person's been behind for 20 years, and it's been causing, you know, caused two income families. But say, you know, somebody who is making $10 an hour as opposed to $8 an hour in 2000. I mean, that's, I guess, bad. You could raise them to 12 bucks and say it's 20%, but hey, it's like if you and I ever owned a stock at 100 and went down to 5, and then it went up to 10, you'd say it went up 100%. Yeah, but it's still 10. It's not 100. Hey, you're supposed, we come back for break. You got a listeners that called in and said, make sure you ask Dan about where the airlines sit in all this, and are their bonds a good buy? Because some of them look like they're paying a little bit.
Yes.
And I've never heard you mention them.
Yep.
We'll do that when we come back. Also, Mr. John Flanagan, so maybe between the two of you guys, to be my Southside person, talk a little about where Muni's fall on this in terms of the taxes and everything else. And I've never heard you mention Muni's for anybody. But
sure,
I'm sure you know.
Absolutely.
Between you and John, you know way more than I do about those things. SPV is up 15, NASDAQ futures up 113. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Lauren, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Dan Gina is in studio along with Mr. Dave Scatino. We have Mr. Jan Flanagan with us in a minute as well. As soon as I go through all this stuff, we have the S&P futures are up 15, NASDAQ futures up 117. And they're pretty much all morning. I'd say we were up 20 when we came in, so we're down maybe just a little, but still up. Dow's up 30. Individual stocks in the Dow. Here's a big mover taking the Dow down. Disney's down 10 bucks on their earnings. Yeah, I didn't have a chance to really look at those. Maybe you did, but, they claim the streaming stuff is not doing as well as they thought, right? Wasn't that the upshot of the conference last night? They're not making as much money on that as they thought they were going to be, but still, I think they're doing okay, but it's down 10 bucks. A lot of stocks have big negative earnings. I've got, Beyond Meat down 17 bucks this morning here too, so some of these are not doing as well as the whole market would think that they all are. DAX up 9, call that flat. FTSE up 22.3%. Check around up 2, call that flat. So Europe in a slumber mode this morning. Asia up pretty heavy though. Nikkei up 171.6%. Shanghai up 40. That's 1.1%. Hang Seng actually with a nice rally too. Up 251. 1%. Evidently, Evergrande group shares, shot up in Hong Kong. This is just what we're talking about, Dan. I bet Evergrande shares went up from, they were down from what? God knows what to like a tenth of that. Now they're up a little bit and it's okay. But still, I don't know. That's another thing I want to ask you. Do you know have anybody who's involved in any of this dollar-denominated debt over these overseas places? Yesterday, Dow down 240, S&P down 38, NASDAQ down 263, because we had the bad CPI report and a bad bond auction. Bonds up 12 basis points to 1.57. The Bund unchanged at minus 0.24. Japan positive 0.06. Oil hanging above 80, but moving down there, down 59 cents to 80.75. Brent down 41 cents, 82.23. Natural gas, and Dan, I don't get this one at all, boy. Up 8 cents, but 4.96. It was like $6, what, 10 days ago?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. RBOB unchanged at 228. We've got gold up $14 now to 18.62, the highest we've seen it in a while. Silver up 29 cents, 25 bucks. I was talking last week, Dan, is silver going to break through 25? It did. I don't know if it's going to hold. Copper up 8 cents, 440. And we've got Bitcoin down 1,500, but still at a pretty high number. It's 64,787. Hey, what do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Good morning. It's 7:36 in Chicago, and happy Veterans Day, thanks to Lou. Today, Chicago, it's partly cloudy, 56 degrees. It's going to be a high of 57 with periods of rain. For our Phoenix listeners, it's start of the day is 57 and clear. It'll be 86 and sunny. Traffic is ramping up. The roadways pretty congested right now, especially the Eisenhower and the Kennedy. There was an earlier accident at the entrance ramp from Mannheim to the inbound Eisenhower. Congestion, stop-and-go traffic. In sports, NBA, the Bulls beat the Mavericks 117-107. Suns beat the Trailblazers 119-109. In the NHL last night, Minnesota beat Arizona 5-2. The Hawks off and host Arizona Friday night. NFL tonight, Miami host the Ravens. Bears have a needed bye week. Arizona hosts the Panthers on Sunday. And we have a full slate of NCAA football and basketball this weekend. Back to you, Chief.
Bears are playing Thanksgiving, right? Aren't they at Detroit?
Yes, 100%.
So it's another kind of an early, it's the early morning game, I think. So.
Right.
No, that's 2 weeks from today, though. That's not next week.
Well, they are off this weekend.
Then they play the next Sunday, and then they play that Thursday.
Yes, they'll play next Sunday, and then they'll play 2 weeks from today.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do.
Dan, you with us?
I am here. Welcome to Chicago, Dan.
Thank you.
Real quick question about airlines. One of my clients
See some of their bands paying up a little bit. The ones that are out 2-3 years, and was asking me your opinion on those. They're over 100, which I don't like paying. Because I mean, I think they're paying like 5%, but if you pay what they're asking for, you're down to like 3.5 or something, or 3.75. What do you? I mean, I think they participated pretty well in the largesse of government. I don't know exactly, Dan. Where do you put those guys now? The airlines? Can you even tell?
Well, when you're talking about the airlines, you can.
We're talking about American, Southwest, and United. Were the three I was looking at. Delta, actually, my brother thought the one at Delta might have been better than any of the other three. But
yeah, we actually have mentioned once. I think we mentioned airlines, and we did buy some of the short paper. They're airline secured equipment trusts, which means that they're backed by the actual planes. And when you're looking at buying those, you want to look at the actual fleet, and you want to see if you're buying. Hopefully, you're buying newer planes. But we had some Hawaiian bonds that mature in 22, and if you can get 3.5% in January of 22, I would be all over those bonds. American Airlines, we also have some secured equipment trusts that mature out 2 years. We're getting closer to 4%. So that's a good yield. That's what you can expect. Those are money good. I think the airlines as a sector are coming back. I was on a flight last night that was oversold, and what I, from people in the industry who I speak to, there's a lot of momentum. And remember, the airlines got paid, you know, they got plenty of PPP during this period.
Yeah. So it was in the billions.
Yeah, so they're not hurting as much as you would think. You know, the other way to play the airlines really are the airports, you know, and on the municipal side, and those are generally a good buy. The default risk on those are really minimal, so that if you have an airport, you know, with the infrastructure bill, if you have an airport that maybe has a lower credit rating, I think this would be a good time to step in.
The equipment trust, for those that don't know what that means, a lot of time when airlines, that's one thing I don't get when we bail these guys out yet again, Dan. I don't want to go on a rant, but you would think that, I mean, the last 10 years has been the best years those guys have ever had. Do you think they'd ever buy a friggin' plane? I mean, they never instead of buying all their stock back,
yeah.
Right, you got me started. Wouldn't you think, I mean, United Airlines, essentially the entire amount of money they made in the last decade, they bought their stock back. Now, don't you think if you and I and John were on the board, we might say, wait a minute, we're going to get 10 new planes delivered this year. Why don't we actually show up for just one, just to humor me, and actually give the guy a check and buy the goddamn plane? I mean, everything is leverage. Why are they like that? Is it just, I don't know.
They still work, you know, they still, despite getting the assistance, they still operate with relatively thin margins. You know, they have all kinds of regulatory issues that they're dealing with that are changing day to day. They're also dealing with, you know, staff, obviously. They could potentially be losing quite a few pilots. So they're, you know, I think some of it would just be conservative, but I totally agree with you. I mean, if you want a better reputation, not only from your customer's point of view, but from, you know, to be competitive in the industry, new planes are certainly the way to go. One airline that I would say, if I had to say from in my experience, that probably has continued to have strong management and good financials, and I owned the bonds years and years ago, is Alaska Airlines.
Really?
Ticker symbol ALK. If you can find any, and if you can get paid, you know, for a short bond, if you can get 3.5 or 3.75 for, or 1 or even 2 year bond, that's probably one of the best managed companies. United, I know, I worked for a few years at the United, you know, the Airline Pilots Association, so I spent plenty of time here in Chicago right down the street. I would say that the management team there maybe wasn't so much looking at growth from the point of view of the business, although they had expanded at the time into their international markets, but I'd say UAL is not going to be the innovator when it comes to, you know, the new planes and the, you know, providing the new benefits and all that. They're going to be a little more of a follower than a leader.
So you like Alaska, you like Delta? You said Delta?
I do like Delta. I do DAL. I think Delta is, again, a well-managed company. It's, you know, a little bit of a different culture, definitely a different culture than you have at Alaska, which is based in Seattle, or United, which is based here in Chicago. You have a company based in Atlanta that's has a pretty strong presence on the East Coast. they have fared very well in this recent period, just because I think they've done all the right things when it's come, you know, during the period of the pandemic, have really not had the negative press that some other airlines have had during this period, and that's for good reason. They treat their employees well. They, you know, they provide, I think, a level of service that's superior to some of the other
Yeah, and who did they, or Jan, who did they buy early on to get them all that Eastern? I mean, I know their hub has always been Atlanta, but the they, when all those airlines were combining, they bought somebody. It wasn't Piedmont, was it?
Northwest Orient?
Northwest went to
recently, yeah. I think Piedmont, yeah.
Piedmont or Allegheny or one of
those. Yeah, Allegheny, yeah, exactly.
No, I think Northwest Air went to
It didn't go to
I'm not sure, but I remember with these things. Oh, United and Continental were the ones that got together, right? And
then yes.
American and who was it? I mean, there were all these plays. There was Eastern, all these guys. I mean, it's actually a fascinating history.
Yeah, Continental was a great purchase for United. Continental had the, you know, flagship service. They had, you know, it's a really strong management team, and you know, that was it really rounded out their route system, you know, geographically.
Well, that's where they got the big. Well, they had sort of a hub in Denver anyway, but Continental, that was their huge hub, right?
Yeah.
Right. Houston, Newark.
I remember because Southwest Air, you didn't mention them. You plus or minus on those guys?
I would say, you know, I've always been plus on Southwest. I think they've continued to grow. Their competition is coming from some of the smaller, the newer markets, airlines. Allegiant, for example, I don't know whether they're going to step in their way, but because Allegiant is doing small city to small city, but Southwest has a business model that seems to be continuing, you know, has continued to work well. They certainly have their you know issues. I think with people getting back to flying and all that, their customer base has been more of the the vacation traveler, if you will, not so much the business traveler. Although that whole area has kind of stepped out, but yeah, Southwest I think is definitely a winner and definitely a continues to they're a survivor.
Let's change gears here a little bit because we have Jan. I haven't heard you mention with all these issues we're having with deductibility of mortgages and different state income taxes. I mean, I don't begin to go down the tax road because I'm not the tax guy at all, but. It does affect people's investing. I mean, that much I obviously know. And with the munis and stuff, where do you think the cities, you know, because Jan's intimately aware of what's going on here in Illinois, where do you think the cities and states, is it a point, Dan, where if somebody, one of your clients is in California or a high-tech state, you might recommend California munis for them? Because you don't pay taxes on munis in your home state, right?
Correct.
And do you ever go there? I mean, and how can you even tell whether they're good buys or not? I mean, the spreads on those things we found that are huge. And then, some of the tax zones, I mean, unless you're get into the ground floor, it's hard to, then you can't sell them if you want to. I mean, what do you find? I mean, what are you seeing, Jen? Are more of that stuff happening or are the city still doing that kind of stuff or are they just taking money from the Fed now?
I think some cities are doing it and I think some are better risk than others. I mean, if you look at Chicago as an example, the big projects here are things like Sterling Bay, private equity developments, infrastructure, federal money, a lot of it. The city is in such a precarious state financially. I just think from a creditworthy standpoint, a lot of these cities have, a tough road trying to sell their bonds.
Some of them have got increases in their bond ratings because of the check they got from the Fed in the last 6 months. I think Illinois is one of them.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, I think their bond rating actually went up, right?
Talk about funny money.
Oh, yeah.
But you know this, the investment field for these a lot better than I do, Dan. I mean, I think there are some cities that have an easier time. They may not be the biggest cities or the ones that seem to have the best prospects today, but over the long haul, they probably offer a good investment opportunity. The traditional ones, I think, are not the good deals they used to be.
I would agree. Yeah, the spreads, if you will, on those have really don't, the yield you're getting doesn't substantiate the risk for many of them. But I will say one thing about investing in municipals in general is that the default rate on municipals across the board, and that includes high yield municipals, Chicago would fall into that category, is extremely low relative to investing in corporates. There are a lot of workouts. Puerto Rico was a story from a number of years ago that eventually worked itself out. And so the concern about default is should not be high. But having municipals, especially in a high tax state, makes a lot of sense. I would prefer the revenues over the GEOs. Revenues could be, they could be industrial revenues. They could be, revenues could be an airport or school system or, not necessarily being invested in the general obligations of those companies. But I think from a credit point of view, things are looking pretty good. You can take a little more risk in this environment. You can go down in credit quality without being too concerned or having to be too concerned about default.
This is a legal question. You guys are much more into this. I seem to recall from when I took my test and when I was in school a long time ago that the revenue bonds, say it's the Chicago whatever water system, that your revenues are supposed to come right from the water bill, correct? And yes. In theory, those were, quote, maybe safer than a general obligation bond. But didn't something happen a few years ago to where there was a Supreme Court case or something to where they actually piled that revenue? Did they flip that upside down? Didn't that happen somewhere?
Yes, and I can't quote chapter and verse on that, Tom. I'd have to dig a little, but you're right. There was a shift on that. And I think it changed the whole dynamic of, the targeted bonds versus the general obligation ones.
Yeah, I think they were able, Dan, to take the money from essentially the water district and put it into the general obligation, and they all ended up with the same rate. Something weird happened in one city.
And it had to do with some bailout or some emergency situation in which the case arose. I can't remember the facts of it, but maybe in the next couple of days I'll dig into that for you.
But right now, Dan, like in a state like California where the taxes can get, what's the highest income tax a state has? Like 10 or 11? Is that what California or New York? Who is that?
I think, is it New Jersey that can go up as high as 13?
So are the bond rates reflective of that? Or does New Jersey get to pay less because they have a, they're giving, or not really?
No, it really depends on the, the credit is really what's going to determine the rating. So with all bonds, whether it be corporate bonds or municipal bonds, it's going to depend on the credit itself. The fact that they have a higher rate might mean that they have higher revenues coming from their taxpayers, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's, the project itself or, the municipality, the water system or whatever may have higher costs as well. So you have to kind of dig in, you have to do your research to find out. You have to look at that specific bond and see where, where the rating would be, and then that would reflect.
Well, Dan, how do you get a trigger point? I mean, I'm not going to say who in your organization, but as everybody knows, that Dan does some work for same people I do work for in terms of the management stuff. Now, suppose somebody wings you, $20 million. Pick a number; it doesn't matter. One of the guys you're talking about, one of our wealthy friends, if we had one, somebody wings you 20, and you like these, I won't say smaller, but good-sized companies that maybe are slightly off the radar that seem to have a cash flow that, they're doing fine. Just because nobody knows about them doesn't mean they're not doing fine. And they're paying pretty good rates, real good rates, considering how safe they are. And that's kind of your – but at some point, if something really weird happens and California comes out with a muni that's paying 5, you're going to be on that too. But how do you where's the choke point where you say – yeah, let's not do more in this ASTE. Let's do a California bond. How often does that flip? Where all of a sudden you there's a number you're keeping your eye on, and Illinois and this number we would recommend a couple hundred thousand in Illinois bond here. How do you make that switch, and when do you?
Yeah, well, we manage our accounts on a customized basis. So depending on where the client resides, their home residence, where they're going to get the tax benefit, we all always have that as in the back of our mind. There are national municipal bonds also that from time to time look cheap relative to corporate, so we're always doing that analysis. There's a period of time not that long ago when you could do crossover, which means you could be owning corporates and you could also own a municipal that actually is yielding more than treasuries. And that happens occasionally where that crossover when that crossover makes sense. So you're looking at the relative value of, say, a corporate bond or relative value, say, of an equity versus that of municipal. So you can buy the muni outright. You can buy it as a national, you know, because it's a, you get the federal tax break, or you can buy it for the local municipality where you're getting the, you know, especially the high tax states where you get the additional benefit. So it's a, it's, I would say it's a relative value play.
So if I were to, just to be straight, because whenever I say anything tax wise, if I were to buy an Illinois bond, despite what Mr. Flanagan tells me, don't buy anything here. If I were to buy an Illinois bond or a Chicago bond, I don't have to pay Illinois taxes on the interest. But if I buy an Indiana bond, I do, correct?
Yes.
But I don't have to pay federal taxes on either one?
Yes.
Okay, so that, what do you, the states don't have, the only people that have the inflation bonds are the Fed, right? The, what do they call them? The ones with the
TIPS.
The TIPS.
Yeah, that's the federal. Yes.
Which is not to be confused with TIFs, which are the states. Those are the tax,
right.
Tax zones, right? Have you,
yes.
Have you ever dabbled in those?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, this is kind of all insurance company stuff, right? Where they just take the thing and never plan on selling it.
Just, right. They lock it away. Yep. Exactly.
So, and you've worked with those guys. Is that a good field? Is that a fascinating field?
I think it is. I mean, when I ran a distressed hedge fund for a number of years, and actually found that the most interesting part of it wasn't necessarily looking at the corporates that had, you know, that were distressed, but looking at the municipals. The bang for the buck, you know, you can, you know, if you're willing to do your homework on these names, there was a lot of upside. And I remember years later getting a call. I had paid 12 for a bond, and again, 100 would be your par amount. And getting a call from the bond salesman.
Well, 12 was is in
$12.
Is in 88 less than
88 less than par. Yeah, yeah. And it was a housing development. But we did the research. It was a the developer was somebody that had been around for 30 years. We really thought it was a good, you know, solid play. And this was, you know, going back a number of years ago. But the coupon was 14%. I got a call from the, you know, when the bonds finally matured a number of years later, from the salesman who had sold me those bonds, telling me that, you know, that was a home run. You know, it was a good call. So yeah, that was, so I think the thing about the munis, just in the same vein as like buying the Thunderbirds and these very, you know, these microcap names that have good cash flow, they're overlooked and your investor base is small. Since a lot of institutions can't buy them based on the size or based on the fact that they're not listed. So there's, you know, opportunity, inefficiencies based just on that. And also frankly, the time that it takes to do the research on these. Most of the time, these municipalities and these companies are gonna be more than happy to talk to investors, and especially investors who are willing to take on a big piece.
Well, Dan, how do you get the, you're in the office. I mean, I'm sure your screens are same as mine, maybe more, but, you know, I have a reasonable field. I mean, I can tell you when they're going up or down for all the stocks that my clients from various places have. You get a feel because they call you, talk about them. But really, I mean, if I didn't have a couple of the guys at the places that I work with call me on these new stocks, I can't keep track of this stuff. I mean, there's more bonds out there than there are stocks, right?
Yes, yeah, I generally, because I started out as a high yield portfolio manager, institutional portfolio manager, I generally don't take as much reverse inquiry from clients. They may say that, hey, can you look at Genomic Revolution? And that's, you know, we did look into that, and that's when we met Kathy Woods a number of years ago, the ARKG fund. So that would be the way I would get involved in an area that's not, you know, say my expertise. But generally they're going to say, hey, you know, we're retiring, or we're looking to, you know, buy a bigger yacht, if you will.
You always need a bigger yacht.
A bigger yacht. That's the, yeah, absolutely. So, or we're looking to, you know, we want to retire young and, you know, so maybe you have to make a shift in their, you know, sort of their overall allocation based on their level of risk tolerance. But when it comes to the name by name, they know we're doing our research, so they're generally not questioning. When they do question, I did get a reverse inquiry on buying some cruise lines recently, and my recommendation was to buy several, to buy like a pool of them, and not to go in on one. And my client, you know, my client said, you know, hey, I like Carnival Cruise Line, and so we bought a little Carnival. We follow it, But just to be a little bit educational, I think is a polite word.
Yeah.
I sent him, you know, showing him that a couple of the others, like Norwegian and Royal, actually had outperformed. So we tend to, you know, we do follow it. We will follow things if a client asks, but we generally tend to generate our own ideas. Those come through conferences and contacts that I've had over three and a half decades.
So how did you find the bond at 12%?
Contacts. So a lot of the salespeople, institutional salespeople that I was dealing with on the muni side would present ideas. You know, so we're always getting flooded with new ideas.
If there was a, well, if you are, Jen, if you wanted to do a muni right now and didn't care about your, what state or city would you think is strong?
I would bet the southern states, just because their cities seem to be on a growth trajectory.
Yes.
Unlike the old, you know, Rust Belt ones. Dan, in your experience, do municipal bankruptcies, let's say like a Detroit case, by and large not affect bondholders, or are they in a class of creditors that can do better than other creditors? Or there haven't been that many municipal bankruptcies, I don't think, to talk about here, but I'm just wondering where bondholders stand in the event of those.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and they generally get paid off. They are higher, if you will, in the capital structure than they would be, say, for a corporation. And they're, although again, patience is the game here. You have to, if you're willing to be patient, the recovery rates are like 90% plus.
Yeah, that's what I suspected. That would be, you know, that would augur in their favor.
That's interesting. Hey, thank you, guys. This is interesting stuff. SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 127. I could stay here for a lot longer, but we got to go. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.